Chapter 3 tells how the diamond is brought up to London, and produces wonderful effects both in the city and at the West End. The circumstances recorded in this story took place some score of years ago, when, as the reader may remember, there was a great mania in the city of London for establishing companies of all sorts, by which many people made pretty fortunes. I was at this period, as the truth must be known, 13th clerk of 24 young gents who did the immense business of the independent West Didlesex Fire and Life Insurance Company, at their splendid stone mansion in Cornhill. Mama had sunk a sum of £400 in the purchase of an annuity at this office, which paid her no less than £6.30 a year, when no other company in London would give her more than 24. The chairman of the directors was the great Mr. Brough, of the house of Brough and Hoff, Crutched Friars Turkey Merchants. It was a new house, but did a tremendous business in the fig and sponge way, and more in the Zant Current line than any other firm in the city. Brough was a great man among the dissenting connection, and you saw his name for hundreds at the head of every charitable society patronized by those good people. He had 9 clerks residing at his office in Crutched Friars. He would not take one without a certificate from the schoolmaster and clergyman of his native place, strongly vouching for his morals and doctrine. And the places were so run after that he got a premium of £400 or £500 with each young gent, whom he made to slave for 10 hours a day, and to whom in compensation he taught all the mysteries of the Turkish business. He was a great man on change too, and our young chaps used to hear from the stockbroker's clerks. We commonly dined together at the Ock and Woolpack, a respectable house, where you get a capital cut of meat, bread, vegetables, cheese, half a pint of porter, and a penny to the waiter, for a shilling. The young stockbrokers used to tell us of immense bargains in Spanish, Greek, and Colombians that Brough made. Hoff had nothing to do with them, but stopped at home minding exclusively the business of the house. He was a young chap, very quiet and steady, of the Quaker persuasion, and had been taken into partnership by Brough for a matter of £30,000. And a very good bargain too. I was told in the strictest confidence that the house one year with another divided a good £7,000, of which Brough had half, Hoff 2/6, and the other 1/6 went to old Tudlow, who had been Mr. Brough's clerk before the new partnership began. Tudlow always went about very shabby, and we thought him an old miser. One of our gents, Bob Swinney by name, used to say that Tudlow's share was all nonsense, and that Brough had it all, but Bob was always too knowing by half. Used to wear a green cutaway coat, and had his free admission to Covent Garden Theatre. He was always talking down at the shop, as we called it. It wasn't a shop, but as splendid an office as any in Cornhill. He was always talking about Vestris and Miss Tree, and singing, "The Bramble, the Bramble, the Jolly Jolly Bramble." One of Charles Kemble's famous songs in Aid Marian, a play that was all the rage then, taken from a famous storybook by one Peacock, a clerk in the India House, and a precious good place he has too. When Brough heard how Master Swinney abused him, and had his admission to the theater, he came one day down to the office where we all were, 24 of us, and made one of the most beautiful speeches I ever heard in my life. He said that for slander he did not care. Contumely was the lot of every public man who had austere principles of his own, and acted by them austerely. But what he did care for was the character of every single gentleman forming a part of the independent West Didlesex Association. The welfare of thousands was in their keeping. Millions of money were daily passing through their hands. The city, the country looked upon them for order, honesty, and good example. And if he found amongst those whom he considered as his children those whom he loved as his own flesh and blood, that order was departed from, that regularity was not maintained, that that good example was not kept up, Mr. B always spoke in his emphatic way, if he found his children departing from the wholesome rules of morality, religion, and decorum, if he found in high or low in the head clerk at 600 a year down to the porter who cleaned the steps, if he found the slightest taint of dissipation, he would cast the offender from him, yea, though he were his own son, he would cast him from him. As he spoke this, Mr. Bro burst into tears, and we who didn't know what was coming, looked at each other as pale as parsnips. All except Swinney, who was 12th clerk, and made believe to whistle. When Mr. B had wiped his eyes and recovered himself, he turned round, and oh, how my heart thumped as he looked me full in the face. How it was relieved, though, when he shouted out in a thundering voice, Mr. Robert Swinney. Sir to you, says Swinney, as cool as possible, and some of the chaps began to titter. Mr. Swinney, roared Bro, in a voice still bigger than before, when you came into this office, this family, sir, for such it is, as I am proud to say you found 23 as pious and well-regulated young men as ever labored together as ever had confided to them the wealth of this mighty capital and famous empire. You found, sir, sobriety, regularity, and decorum. No profane songs were uttered in this place sacred to business. No slanders were whispered against the heads of the establishment, but over them I pass. I can afford, sir, to pass them by. No worldly conversation or foul jesting disturbed the attention of these gentlemen, or desecrated the peaceful scene of their labors. You found Christians and gentlemen, sir. I paid for my place like the rest, said Swinney. Id my governor take shah, silence, sir. Your worthy father did take shares in this establishment, which will yield him one day an immense profit. He did take shares, sir, or you never would have been here. I glory in saying that every one of my young friends around me has a father, a brother, a dear relative or friend, who is connected in a similar way with our glorious enterprise, and that not one of them is there, but has an interest in procuring, at a liberal commission, other persons to join the ranks of our association. But, sir, I am its chief. You will find, sir, your appointment signed by me, and in like manner, I, John Bro, annullit. Go from us, sir. Leave us quit a family that can no longer receive you in its bosom. Mr. Swinney, I have wept, I have prayed, sir, before I came to this determination. I have taken counsel, sir, and am resolved. Depart from out of U.S. Not without 3 months' salary, though, Mr. B. : that cock won't fight. They shall be paid to your father, sir. My father be hanged. I tell you what, Bro, I'm of age, and if you don't pay me my salary, I'll arrest you, by jingo, I will. I'll have you in quad, or my name's not Bob Swinney. Make out a check, Mr. Roundhand, for the 3 months' salary of this perverted young man. 21.5, Roundhand, and nothing for the stamp, cried out that audacious Swinney. Here it is, sir, receipted. You needn't cross it to my bankers. And if any of you gents like a glass of punch this evening at 8 o'clock, Bob Swinney's your man, and nothing to pay. If Mr. Bro would do me the honor to come in and take a whack? Come, don't say no, if you'd rather not. We couldn't stand this impudence, and all burst out laughing like mad. Leave the room, yelled Mr. Bro, whose face had turned quite blue. And so Bob took his white hat off the peg, and strolled away with his isle, as he called it, very much on one side. When he was gone, Mr. Bro gave us another lecture, by which we all determined to profit, and going up to Roundhand's desk put his arm round his neck, and looked over the ledger. What money has been paid in today, Roundhand? He said, in a very kind way. The widow, sir, came with her money. 904 10 and 6 say 904 L 10s. 60. Captain Spar, sir, paid his shares up. Grumbles, though, and says he's no more. 50 shares. 2 installments 350s, sir. He's always grumbling. He says he has not a shilling to bless himself with until our dividend day. Anymore? Mr. Roundhand went through the book and made it up £1,900 in all. We were doing a famous business now, though when I came into the office, we used to sit and laugh and joke and read the newspapers all day, bustling into our seats whenever a stray customer came. Bro never cared about our laughing and singing then, and was hand and glove with Bob Swinney, but that was in early times, before we were well in harness. £1,900, and £1,000 in shares. Bravo, round and bravo, gentlemen. Remember, every share you bring in brings you 5%. Down on the nail. Look to your friends, stick to your desks, be regular. I hope none of you forget church. Who takes Mr. Swinney's place? Mr. Samuel Titmarsh, sir. Mr. Titmarsh, I congratulate you. Give me your hand, sir. You are now 12th clerk of this association, and your salary is consequently increased £5 a year. How is your worthy mother, sir, your dear and excellent parent? In good health, I trust. And long, long, I fervently pray, may this office continue to pay her annuity. Remember, if SE has more money to lay out, there is higher interest than the last for her, for she is a year older, and 5%. For you, my boy. Why not you as well as another? Young men will be young men, and a £10 note does no harm. Does it, Mr. Abednego? Oh, no, says Abednego, who was third clerk, and who was the chap that informed against Swinney, and he began to laugh, as indeed we all did, whenever Mr. Bro made anything like a joke. Not that they were jokes, only we used to know it by his face. Oh, by the by, Roundhand, says he, a word with you on business. Mrs. Bro wants to know why the deuce you never come down to Fulham. Law, that's very polite, said Mr. Roundhand, quite pleased. Name your day, my boy. Say Saturday, and bring your nightcap with you. You're very polite, I'm sure. I should be delighted beyond anything, but no buts, my boy. Harky. The Chancellor of the Exchequer does me the honor to dine with us, and I want you to see him, for the truth is, I have bragged about you to his lordship as the best actuary in the three kingdoms. Roundhand could not refuse such an invitation as that, though he had told us how Mrs. R. and he were going to pass Saturday and Sunday at Putney, and we who knew what a life the poor fellow led, were sure that the head clerk would be prettily scolded by his lady when she heard what was going on. She disliked Mrs. Bro very much, that was the fact, because Mrs. B. kept a carriage, and said she didn't know where Pentonville was, and couldn't call on Mrs. Roundhand. Though, to be sure, her coachman might have found out the way. And oh, Roundhand, continued our governor, draw a check for 700, will you? Come, don't stare, man. I'm not going to run away. That's right, 790, say, while you're about it. Our board meets on Saturday, and never fear, I'll account for it to them before I drive you down. We shall take up the Chancellor at Whitehall. So saying, Mr. Bro folded up the check, and shaking hands with Mr. Roundhand very cordially, got into his carriage and four. He always drove four horses even in the city, where it's so difficult, which was waiting at the office door for him. Bob Swinney used to say that he charged two of the horses to the company, but there was never believing half of what that Bob said. He used to laugh and joke so. I don't know how it was, but I and a gent by the name of Hoskins, 11th clerk, who lived together with me in Salisbury Square, Fleet Street, where we occupied a very genteel two-pair, found our flute duet rather tiresome that evening, and as it was a very fine night, strolled out for a walk West End way. When we arrived opposite Covent Garden Theatre, we found ourselves close to the Globe Tavern, and recollected Bob Swinney's hospitable invitation. We never fancied that he had meant the invitation in earnest, but thought we might as well look in. At any rate, there could be no harm in doing so. There, to be sure, in the back drawing room, where he said he would be, we found Bob at the head of a table, and in the midst of a great smoke of cigars, and 18 of our gents rattling and banging away at the table with the bottoms of their glasses. What a shout they made as we came in. Hurry, says Bob, here's two more. Two more chairs, Mary, two more tumblers, two more hot waters, and two more goes of gin. Who would have thought of seeing tit, in the name of goodness? Why, said I, we only came in by the merest chance. At this word there was another tremendous roar. And it is a positive fact, that every man of the 18, had said he came by chance. However, chance gave us a very jovial night, and that hospitable Bob Swinney paid every shilling of the score. Gentlemen, says he, as he paid the bill, I'll give you the health of John Bro Esquire, and thanks to him for the present of 21 L. 5s, which he made me this morning. What do I say 21 L. 5s? Question mark that and a month's salary, that I should have had to pay forfeit down on the nail, by jingo, for leaving the shop, as I intended to do tomorrow morning. I've got a place, a tip-top place, I tell you. 5 guineas a week, 6 journeys a year, my own horse and gig, and to travel in the west of England in oil and spermaceti. Here's confusion to gas, and the health of Messrs. Gann and Company, of Thames Street, in the city of London. I have been thus particular in my account of the West Didlisex Insurance Office, and of Mr. Bro, the managing director, though the real names are neither given to the office nor to the chairman, as you may be sure, because the fate of me and my diamond pin was mysteriously bound up with both, as I am about to show. You must know that I was rather respected among our gents at the West Didlisex, because I came of a better family than most of them, had received a classical education, and especially because I had a rich aunt, Mrs. Haggarty, about whom, as must be confessed, I used to boast a good deal. There is no harm in being respected in Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.